What would you do if you discovered a single footprint on a beach you believed was yours alone? For 24 years, Robinson Crusoe had walked that sand in perfect solitude, and then one mark in the earth, too large to be his own. This moment of terror sits at the heart of a story that has haunted our collective imagination for three centuries. But Robinson Crusoe isn't just an adventure tale about shipwrecks and survival. It's a profound meditation on isolation, faith, and what remains of us when everything familiar is stripped away. Born from the pen of Daniel Defoe at age 60, this pioneering novel has inspired everything from reality television to philosophical treatises, from children's cartoons to post-colonial criticism. Its power lies not in exotic adventure, but in a question we all face. Who are we when no one is watching? Robinson Crusoe's downfall begins with stubbornness, not storms. Born in 1632 to a comfortable York family, he receives sensible advice from his father: embrace the middle station of life, avoiding poverty's hardships and wealth's burdens. But Crusoe possesses what he calls his ill fate, an insatiable restlessness drowning out reason. Despite his mother's tears and father's warnings, he slips away to Hull and boards a ship for London on September 1, 1651. He's 18, carrying little money and no blessing. Almost immediately, the sea punishes his disobedience. A violent storm off Yorkshire terrifies even experienced sailors. Crusoe, seasick and desperate, promises God he'll return home if spared. Yet when the weather calms, a companion dissolves his remorse with punch and false courage. Days later, an even worse storm strikes. 11 ships sink within view. Their vessel springs an unfixable leak, forcing them to abandon ship. An old sea captain calls Crusoe a Jonah, the biblical figure whose disobedience brought disaster to his shipmates, and predicts continued calamity. But Crusoe cannot help himself. This pattern of ignoring warnings and following impulse establishes the moral architecture of everything that follows. Crusoe's journey oscillates between fortune and ruin. After escaping Barbary pirates, he reaches Brazil and builds a prosperous sugar plantation. 50 rolls of tobacco, extensive cane fields, the comfortable life his father envisioned. But restlessness returns. When merchants propose a slave trading venture to Guinea, he abandons security for quick profits, a decision he later calls evidence of his profound lack of prudence. The 1659 voyage proves catastrophic. Two hurricanes drive their ship westward until it hits sand. Violent waves break over them. Through desperate swimming, Crusoe alone survives, the only one of 11 men to reach shore with nothing but a knife, tobacco pipe, and small box. That first night, he sleeps in a thorny tree on what he'll call the Island of Despair. September 30, 1659, marks the beginning of 28 years of solitude. The morning after the wreck, Crusoe discovers the ship has drifted closer to shore. Over 13 days, he makes 11 trips, salvaging cables, rigging, sails, tools, food, and even money, which he initially scorns as useless. On his final visit, a storm forces him to swim back. By morning, the ship has vanished. He establishes a fortress on a steep hillside, planting two rows of sharpened stakes with ship's cable between them until his wall is nearly 5 feet thick. Inside, he pitches a tent and digs into the hill, creating a cave-like dwelling. He cuts notches on a post to mark time. September 30, 1659 becomes day one of his new existence. What follows is a masterclass in human ingenuity. Despite never having handled tools, Crusoe crafts furniture, fashions crude lamps from goat tallow, and learns to make baskets. One day, emptying old poultry feed, he notices green stalks sprouting, perfect English barley and rice. This apparent miracle brings tears as he considers divine providence. Through trial and error, he masters agriculture and captures goats for breeding. He explores his domain, discovering the western shore teeming with turtles and fowl, though his original habitation remains home. His daily journal records his transformation from civilized man to self-sufficient sovereign of a kingdom of one. In his fourth year, Crusoe marks his anniversary with newfound comfort. viewing the distant world as irrelevant. He recognizes peculiar advantages: freedom from temptation, sovereignty over his domain, possession of all he needs. But his greatest transformation occurs during a severe illness in his fifth year. Struck with fever, he experiences a terrifying dream of a flaming figure condemning him. "Seeing all these things have not brought thee to repentance, now thou shalt die." This nightmare awakens his dormant conscience. He reflects on 8 years of seafaring wickedness without a single thought of divine providence. Opening his salvaged Bible, he finds words speaking directly: "Call on me in the day of trouble, and I will deliver, and thou shalt glorify me." As he recovers, Crusoe begins reading the New Testament daily, experiencing genuine repentance. He cries out for Jesus, the first true prayer of his life. He now understands that deliverance from sin surpasses deliverance from physical isolation. This spiritual awakening transforms his solitude from misery to contentment, making the next 15 years bearable. After 15 peaceful years, a single footprint, too large to be his own, shatters Crusoe's solitude. He stands, like one thunderstruck, as if I had seen an apparition, and flees to his fortress, like one pursued. The irony cuts deep. Having once longed for human company, he now trembles at the thought of seeing another person. This terror drives him to construct a second fortification with 7 gun ports and plant thousands of stakes. Wandering westward, Crusoe discovers the horrifying truth. Savages from the mainland land here for cannibalistic feasts. The beach is scattered with skulls, hands, feet, and bones. Yet this discovery eases his mind. These savages never search the island, and having remained concealed for 18 years, he can stay hidden if careful. In his 24th year, Crusoe spots 30 savages dancing around a fire. When one captive flees toward his dwelling, Providence calls him to intervene. Crusoe shoots the pursuers and rescues the man, who kneels repeatedly in gratitude, placing Crusoe's foot upon his head in servitude. Crusoe names him Friday and begins teaching him English. This year proves the pleasantest of all. Conversation restores use to his tongue after years of silence. After 27 years, Crusoe spots an English ship whose captain has been marooned by mutineers. Through clever strategy, they recapture the vessel. On December 19, 1686, after 28 years, 2 months, and 19 days, Crusoe sails for England, arriving June 1687. His parents are dead, but his Brazilian plantation has flourished. Though wealthy, he remains restless, visiting his island colony in 1694. Why does this story endure? Crusoe's profound loneliness, 24 years before Friday arrives, taps into our deepest fears about isolation. His survival through constant work demonstrates human capacity for adaptation. His spiritual journey from rebellion to repentance offers a framework for finding meaning in suffering. Robinson Crusoe asks, "Who are we when stripped of civilization's comforts? How do we find purpose in apparent meaninglessness?" In our age of curated personas and constant connectivity, Crusoe's radical solitude feels both terrifying and strangely appealing. His story reminds us that meaning isn't found in comfort or company alone, but in how we respond when everything familiar is stripped away. The footprint in the sand still terrifies us, because our own kingdoms are never as secure as we imagine.